Good morning. We call our November the 10th school board workshop to order. Can we please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning, and I want to welcome my our guests who are joining us in person and virtual, as well as my dais. I'd like to start to my left. I have Mr. Carl Persis representing District 4, Mr. Ruben Colon representing District 5, our school board attorney, Mr. Ted Doran. To my far right, I have Mrs. Erin Lieben, our agency clerk, Ms. Jamie Haynes representing District 1, Ms. Linda Cuthbert, and my vice chairman representing District 3, and our school superintendent, Dr. Carmen Bagabin. I am Ida Wright, the chairman for this year. At this time, we will start with item 2.01, facilities. Dr. Bagabin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I would like to call Mr. Greg Aiken, our chief operating officer, along with Mr. Stephen Group, our director for planning and construction, and Ms. Stephanie Doster, coordinator for planning. On August the 4th, 2020, at that school board meeting, the board requested more information on the redistricting of the Central Florida Halifax attendance boundaries. Today we have Mr. Aiken and his team who will provide us with a presentation on this subject.
Madam Chair, board members, Dr. Bagabin, thank you for this opportunity. And Ms. Wright, thank you for the 7+ years you've been with us. Appreciate that very much. We do have Stephanie Doster, and she is not here, but she's on the phone. Okay. So I will be running the PowerPoint, and she'll be available for questions. Same with Mr. Steve Grube and I. So thank you. Stephanie, you want to take away?
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Very well. Okay, wonderful. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me. I can barely hear you guys, so I'm going to try really hard. Is the PowerPoint up?
Yes, I'm on slide 2, August 4th, school board meeting.
Slide 2. Okay, perfect. So, hi, guys. August 4th, we met last, and we went over our Central Halifax attendance boundaries. We talked about the rezoning that was initiated by the board. We looked at the schools in the surrounding areas, and we also went over the number of students in the area that are attending schools outside of their home area that are being bused. We also looked at possible scenarios for student relocation based on the initiative to rezone students closer to their homes. So if we go to the next slide, you may remember this is our count of students that were in the area being bused in Central Halifax. We initially had a number of about 551 students. Those are the students that are being bused. But the more I looked into this, there's an additional 154 students that are not attending the schools that they are zoned for, but are living in this area. So those students are either on variances or they're attending programs at other schools that aren't offered at the school that they're zoned for. So I just wanted to kind of also bring to light that there's more like 700 students in this area that if we were to rezone, that would then be attending the new zone area. So that number is a little more than we were thinking. We started looking at the schools that are available closer. I just wanted to kind of readjust that number that was initially given to you of 551 because, you know, students may choose to not be on a variance or do their, what is the other, uh, opportunity scholarships, yes. There were students that are also on opportunity scholarships that may choose to then now attend their current or their future rezone. So I just wanted to bring that to light. Going to our next slide, our next moves here are engaging in our community and gaining feedback from community leaders and those that live in this area. I'd like to start scheduling workshops and work groups. That's posing some issues. As you can see, virtual is not always the best route. And in person right now with COVID is also posing quite an issue. We also need to meet with district staff to evaluate the student needs in these areas and decide what programs might be located at the new schools that will accommodate these students. Programming at schools can really change student capacity. So this is an important component to look at to determine if we rezone certain areas with programs that are accommodating, you know, are the numbers true for their capacity? So, you know, that's another big step to take is meeting with district staff to determine, you know, what do these students need and where are we most able to accommodate? So the timing of this redistricting should also kind of coincide with the opening of our new schools that will have more available capacity. However, the new facility capacity alone will not be sufficient to house all the students in the central Halifax area. As I said before, we have a little bit larger of a number. And the more we also looked at the surrounding schools, West Side is kind of out of the question because we have new development in this area and student reservations are increasing. So with the student reservations for infill and new projects, over the next year or two, we're expecting an influx of students in that area. And then Palm Terrace having the opportunity scholarship program right now because of their school grade. And we had previously been advised not to use that as a school. You know, it's a work in progress. So we're looking for that feedback from the community to determine the key factors for moving forward. Stop me if you guys have any questions or you'd like to discuss anything as I'm going through it. So our next slide is just concerns that I have moving forward. Oop, I'm trying to get my slides to move as well. So we have, you know, staffing for moving forward with this seems like a little bit of a need. We do have an open position available in the planning department that we're hoping to fill to help with focusing on our daily tasks in the planning department, as well as this redistricting, plus our new construction projects. So I'm currently working with our capacity innovations. That's our demographer who, you know, is helping with a lot of the information and the background we're gathering for this redistricting. So, you know, Tom Moore has been a great help so far, and we'll continue working forward with him for projections and demographics and all the key information that'll go along. Some other concerns that were presented to us, you know, to help alleviate any questions as far as demographics go. You know, public meetings are another concern. Those are a huge part of the planning process, meeting with the public, getting feedback, assessing what their needs are in the community, assessing what their wants are, and then also community leaders. This is a really important factor in planning this redistricting. And right now with the coronavirus, having meetings and having in-person meetings, which are really key for many, for this community, it's posing to be a bit trying. We can always send out, you know, surveys and hope that you get feedback, but the real key to getting feedback is face-to-face workshops. So we're going to have to get creative moving forward and try to get around this COVID roadblock. But I think we can hopefully do that sooner than later if things start easing up. So another concern, which I've already mentioned, was the capacity in the surrounding schools. So we are building two new schools, hopefully in the next year to 2 years, to help accommodate students in this area. But we're still going to need to get a little creative and maybe reach a little further out than we initially had thought to accommodate all the students. And so this may lead to maybe partial redistricting or phasing the redistricting, which, you know, may be a good idea as the schools become available to then redistrict in closer areas. But obviously this can be part of the discussion, part of feedback from not only you guys, but the community and community leaders. And then budget. I'm not sure, you know, obviously this is uncertain times with, you know, our allocations and what we're going to have moving forward. And, you know, I'm hoping that there are no hindrances on creating the available facility spaces for our population of students in that area. So that's the gist of it. I'd love to open it up for discussion and get some feedback from the board and, you know, kind of continue this conversation and maybe get some good ideas on what you guys are thinking.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Colleagues, who would like to go first? Are there any questions? Go ahead, Mr. Persis, and then Mr. Cologne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that what I think we need to crystallize with this, particularly before you go, is what you envisioned to be the real goal for all of this. And I recall a couple of points, and I may not be saying them exactly the way you said them, and there may be more. Okay. But I recall one being that one of the things we wanted to do was to make it so that parents would not have to travel so far to be involved in their children's education. The second point that we often talk about in this room is to minimize the amount of time students spend on buses as opposed to in classrooms. And so one of the goals also was to achieve that. But I wanted to hear you because I know there are more, and I think that's what kind of drove a little bit of the conversation, that if in fact we do want to do both of those things, that we needed to look at the facility at Terry T. Small, and certainly that needed to be replaced, I think, rather than added on. Mm-hmm. So again, I certainly want to make sure that we hear from you today. Okay. On this issue. Yeah.
Go ahead, Mr. Cole.
Agreed. And so one of the things, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Oster, when we met, at the time when we were having this conversation, we had not solidified Terry T. And so the impression that I got was that in order to accomplish this without Terry T., we still did not have the real estate to do it appropriately. That's what I took away. And seeing this come back up again, I'm a huge supporter of this. However, you know, just like Mr. Persis and shared, you know, Ms. Wright, this is your heart. And so I would caution us considering this if it's going to be two huge transitions in 3 years, 4 years, and may not accomplish what we aim for it to accomplish, or will it, I guess, is the question, which is that homeschool stability environment. So, you know, we shuffle them, bring all these students closer to home, and then in 3 or 4 years do this all over again. So that's my concern. I mean, when we met about this, Ms. Doster, one-on-one, I didn't go away with the impression that we could do this without it being a huge disruption, because Turie T. just doesn't have the real estate for the additional students. So that's the only thing I was concerned about, because I didn't take away that we could without it being crazy. So thank you.
Okay. Go ahead, Linda.
I think we all have to remember what's best for our students. I truly believe Turie T. needs to be rebuilt. They are entitled, you know, any older elementary school is entitled to have the best facilities available, not just for the students and the staff, but a place for families to meet. And so I do have a couple of concerns. Do we have enough room for a 750 rebuild on the campus? Is there plenty of room still to have athletic allocations for PE as well as recess? Do we still have a separation of where the buses will come in and where the public will park, as well as where the parents will come in for pickup, as well as staff parking? So, and as we do all of this, I don't want to segregate our schools. I would love for not only our students to have their home place, but I don't want it to all of a sudden segregate our schools more. Is there some way we can have still the diversity and still have a home school for the children? It's wonderful to be able to walk to school. I mean, I walk to elementary and I walk to my junior high. My high school is a little too far away, however, but it's wonderful to ride one's bike and to walk to school. That's kind of an Americana a dream. So as we bring our students back, but I agree with Ms. Doster, they're all concerns, but we have to recognize the concerns. And over the few years, you're right, Mr. Cologne, but all of these ideas need to come to light so we can address them. So when we're ready to reconstruct the school, to rebuild the school, we have a set deadline. We know who's going to be attending and what the PTA is going to do, so everyone has a chance. So when those doors open, the doors open, and we take on it running. And so they have that transition time that's so very important. So if it takes a year or two, we need to do it right. We need to rethink what the needs are of the community. So I know this is not the time to have a lot of public meetings in public, but I think we can arrange it some way in social distance, because that visual is so important. Seeing the Pearson come together in the visual, as well as Chisholm and George Marks and Deltona, when the parents got to walk up and see the map, see the designs, be able to touch it and hear the discussion, be there with their neighbors side by side, that's a whole different ballgame than seeing it on Zoom. So if we can find an area where you can social distance, meet at, you know, Mainland High School, and have a capacity in the first 500 can get, if we can do that at Mainland High School's auditorium, I think it's well worth to hear and to see what the public has to say. So, but we need to do this right, and discussing all of these issues that we see on our concerns and on this PowerPoint is all legitimate, and it's all necessary for us to discuss openly and honestly as we move forward. And I expect to see you at the dais discussing it and giving us advice. So thank you, and looking forward to hearing from you.
Thank you. Go ahead, Ms. Haynes.
So I agree with what all my colleagues have said up to this point. And, you know, my heart is for that community and that school, having been housed myself over there for several years behind it when EDC was there. And so my question would be, I believe we still own the property that EDC used to sit on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that backs up straight to Turie T. and Campbell. Mm-hmm. So I would think, you know, to answer what Mrs. Cuthbert said, I would think, you know, if we need to expand into that property since we already own it, to make sure that we give a new school to the students at Turie T. and give them the space they need, I think that could be looked at. Some concerns I have just even about the piece of property itself is, as we move forward, because I believe that that community deserves a brand new school, and they deserve a state-of-the-art school with the latest technology and everything. I think we've got to look at the structure, though, of that school, because there are flooding issues there. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have to take that into account. And, you know, we need to be upfront about it so that there's no hidden costs later that come in and say, oh, well, you know, we discovered this. So I think a thorough investigation of the property itself, the soil, where the water table sits and all that needs to happen. But I believe those children in that community deserve it. And, you know, Betty Powers was promised a long time ago that that community would get a brand new school. And we're still sitting here, and she's been retired how many years, and they don't have it. And that's wrong. You know, that's on us as an entire district that we didn't follow through. I hear what Mrs. Cuthbert's saying about the segregation piece, but in my district, I have Stark Elementary. And, you know, the plan at one point is that Stark Elementary was going to be closed, and those children were going to be rezoned. And that community got together, and they spoke. And I appreciate the fact that we listened, and we left them with their school. Now, yes, eventually they need a state-of-the-art school also, but I believe Turie T. really comes first, because I've been on both campuses, and I've seen the condition and everything. But, you know, that community is a walk-zone school, and I believe it's been very positive for those kids to be able to keep that community or keep that school in their community, be able to walk over to it. I know that during the spring and summer when we were handing out meals, it was very easy for those children to have access to meals because they could walk right across the street or, you know, two blocks down, and they could have access to food. And I feel that that's very important. So I think what I need to know today, because looking at those numbers, if we have a total of 705 students that are not attending their zone school, but they live somewhere within that area, I think we need to have a very honest conversation about what the numbers currently are at Turie T. What is, you know, how many more can we realistically add and build on that property? And I think we should be able to take the property that's sitting right there behind it. I mean, because we tore down everything that was on the old EDC property, and we still own it, so why not use it to our benefit? But I think we need to talk about how many students can it hold realistically, and what we can do to ensure that, you know, we build a structurally sound project at a cost that we can afford. And I'd like to see it happen sooner than later. I am concerned where economically and financially we are right now. I know that a lot of people just are not paying attention, but, you know, I've had a lot of individuals, including Mr. Dorn, and I know he sent the articles to you guys too about what's happening financially, you know, and what we're looking at with possible loss of revenue for K-12 education across the United States, and what's happening to retirement funds and things like that. And so, you know, if we're going to do this, I believe we're going to have to move on it sooner than later, because if we wait too much, I could see that we would be in a situation where we were years ago, and we tore EDC down with the thought we were going to have a building, and that building never came to be. And so we've got staff, you know, shoved in Brewster, shoved here, shoved all over the district, because the money then was no longer there. But Mrs. Wright, I do defer to you and, you know, what your thoughts and feelings are, because this is your community. But those kids deserve the opportunity to have a new school. And there's nothing worse than putting a kindergartner on a bus and them spending 45 minutes every morning and 45 minutes every afternoon riding a bus. I mean, that's just, I would say, how many adults want to do that? And then their parents can't get to the school to participate in anything. And that's hard for little ones to understand. Why can't, you know, we go to the spaghetti dinner or the PTA meeting or open house and all that. So thank you.
But thank you, colleagues. So thank you, Mrs. Doster, for the presentation. I, too, agree with Ms. Cuthbert. We have to have in-person meetings. Zoom will not work. And so we will either have to look at Mainland High School. I'm sure there are some other church halls that may consider. We may have to look at Campbell's cafeteria to allow parents to come. And that would probably be a little more ideal than Mainland because it is in their neighborhood where they could come and talk about that. I'm willing to lead this effort because it is that important. And I thought that we had already kind of voted that we would rebuild Tour T, so that's why I'm a little surprised about some of the comments, because we had already said that we had that money, that mm-hmm. we were going to do this. So I think at this point, it is really about bringing the parents in. Mr. Akins or Mr. Group, what would be the first step for parents to see what could actually fit on the property? Because I think that would be a good starting point, even with some just a sketch of what could potentially sit on that property.
Yeah, so like Ms. Madam Chair, like Ms. Cuthbert, Ms. Haynes mentioned earlier, we do have property behind that. Our intention would be to build behind the current school and then transition back to the new school just behind where the current school is today. That would allow us to have additional parking up front and a bus loop separately. So, Steve, we've kind of thought about these things. We haven't put anything on paper yet, and so that would be our next step, would be kind of looking at that and then holding these meetings. We have to hold more than one meeting.
Correct.
And just limit the number, and they have to sign up to come in so we can manage the COVID and get all the input mm-hmm. we need over a series of several weeks to be able to do each one of the schools moving forward. So, Steve, did you want to add to that? Trying to answer some of your questions, but it's been a while since you asked them. So,
yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Our desire, our intention is to build a new 750-seat school on that property behind Campbell and Turie T. We haven't laid it out yet. We've looked at it geographically, looked at the size, and like Mr. Akin said, we haven't put really any pencil to paper yet to do any preliminary layouts. That would be our one of our first steps. That kind of dovetails with the programming effort as to, okay, what are we putting in there? Mm-hmm. So we can start laying out block diagrams and see what fits, and then we have to decide just what's going in there, what academic programs, what size, what can we realistically put there. And then we have to take into account, too, that we're going to have a Turie T. Small existing building that we have to look at in terms of repurposing, what happens there. We have to consider, do we keep that building in its entirety? We know that there are some wing parts of it that we probably could justify taking down. But that would be the beyond looking beyond the new school. What are we going to do with that property? And realistically, it makes sense and it's within our means. But we're not quite there yet. Our intent is to start that programming and design at the beginning of the year. And that would kind of dovetail in with what Stephanie was talking about in terms of the rezoning as well. Those two were kind of go side by side. They kind of dovetail together. That new school with that capacity is kind of hinges upon that rezoning effort in order to make that work. So we're just scratching the surface now. That's our top priority in terms of our design efforts for the beginning of the year.
Okay. Yeah, in the low-lying area, I think you mentioned earlier, TT Small currently doesn't, but the roadway does. So that's something we would address during mm-hmm. our preliminary and our designs. And also demographics. I think you mentioned demographics as well. Part of our presentation to the community would be looking at the demographics. Mm-hmm. And then what would change basically from, you know, if they came from this school and had at this school, what would the, you know, demographics be? What would we project the grade to be based on, you know, student information and all of the demographics? That's our step. And I think what we're looking for today, Madam Chair, is some direction to go ahead and move forward with that for the board. Okay. And so we can come back in and continue the conversation with you and then our community stakeholders as well and start setting those meetings up. This is a long process. It's not going to be done tomorrow. And so we can start fairly soon, and then we can kind of move towards that direction, make sure we capture everything.
Okay. And so with that said, that was going to be my next question. What is it that you are asking from us?
So just to move forward.
Okay. Yeah. And so I would say that one of the things I would strongly urge Superintendent, as well as you, Mr. Akins, Mr. Mm-hmm. Grube, for us to get a committee together of some parents and community stakeholders.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because with having a conversation with them first, mm-hmm. and then having them help us champion with parents, because we know that all of the students will not be able to attend Tour T Small. Mm-hmm. But we do have to keep in mind, as you talk about segregating schools, we are going to build a new Ortona, and some of those students actually attend Ortona as well as Osceola. So we may want to look at an area where an entire group of children could go to that school as well. But Tour T would probably be predominantly African-American, and we do have other schools in the district that are predominantly either African-American or predominantly white. So it won't be anything new. I think the programming as well as what resources we provide to the school mm-hmm. will make a difference. And getting the community involved and having some extracurricular activities or co-curricular activities really is the difference. So when you talk about experience and you talk about exposure, mm-hmm. normally the difference between more affluent schools or in children that are in Title I or our poor schools is actually exposure and opportunity to things that they normally would not see. And that's the beauty of having segregated schools. But again, most of the time when that takes place, we actually use children of African American or Latinos to segregate schools versus busing white children into those predominant areas. And so I think it's just as fair for them to be able to walk to school or ride their bikes as any other community. And so some things we can't help, then we, as well as the community, have to provide opportunities so that they are exposed to different things within their communities. So for me, go ahead, Mr.
Just for clarity, so this is all a conversation related to the building of Tour T and that eventual, because that's where I've kind of was a little bit thrown off, because I'm like, wait a second, I thought we were waiting for Tour T, and so if this is all a part of that big conversation, then it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so, absolutely, you know. But, you know, for some reason, I was under the impression that we were trying to accomplish this without Tour T, which I think would have been very difficult because we didn't have the real estate. So I'll scratch what I said before, because we're how many years out from Tour T, we're thinking?
We would occupy that building in 2023. We start the design work and programming first of the year.
Okay. So the main thing is we have to have TT Small done first to be able to do your redistricting. If we don't have TT Small, we can't do the redistricting.
And
that's what the data was showing. Mm-hmm. And I meant to answer that question too, but too many questions coming through. So that's kind of like where we are. But the first actual step is to get the community and our partners input first, and then let us do some design and some preliminary work to kind of see what it's going to look like from A to Z, right, including program, and then start bringing that done to fruition, and then we'll start the construction, and then everything else there falls into place thereafter.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Mr. Persis?
Well, I sort of disagreeing with you a little bit on this because mm-hmm. of COVID and everything else. If we're going to wait and do all the community things and input and all that stuff as it relates to just the school itself, I think we should be building that school as soon as possible. Let the community kind of see this facility going up, and then that simultaneously we can have meetings and talk, because the real issue is going to be about being able to excite that community about this brand new school, because those parents who have been sending their children to other schools, wherever they are, they may like where they're sending their mm-hmm. children. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to have to really show them this facility and, you know, what's going to be there and why, and it's going to be the newest and greatest and best and so exciting. And my goodness, why wouldn't you want your child to go there so close to home and mm-hmm. brand new and everything? And I know, as we always do, children who have been attending, let's say, Horizon, and they're in the fourth grade, we let them just finish out a course. But what this will do, will start that younger group of students coming in. So when it opens, it likely will not open to its fullest capacity, because you'll have students who will remain maybe for a year or two to exit out of their elementary school. That's what always happens. But this is a look to the future. And I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't want anything to hold back the building of Terry T. Small. It's going to be funded through capital outlay.
Right.
So it's not about sales tax. The money's in the bank, and it's there. And all that's needed is design, get it going, come back to the board, and we can get this thing up and running. That's my only caution. I love input and community and all of that too, but you know, I don't want anything to hold back the people seeing, because otherwise it's going to look like we're just a lot of talk and there's no action. Well, let's show them some action.
And I think Mr. Persis, that's a great point, but that was my question. And if I'm not mistaken, you said we're going to start all of that at the same time.
Yes, ma'am. That's what I was going to answer. Maybe I misspoke.
I wasn't sure when we started.
No, sir. So we need to there's several different pieces to this puzzle, and so all of them have to happen at the same time so we can get to a complete design, ready to go and build. So we want to stay on our timeline. And the only way to do that is to start right now with our community input and continue with what Steve and the group are doing for design. Okay. So, and we can tweak the design because this is all conceptual anyway, and then we get into the design of the actual building to 100%, then you'll see what it is at the end. And that's what we take from the community, which will be down the line for final design and then build. Okay. No, it's going to start. All we're asking for is we're good to go. You want us to move. You want us to start doing these, and then let's go. I mean, that's kind of like where we are.
Great. Thank you.
So apologize.
I didn't mean to.
No. But I understood what you're saying. It's both. It's now. Start now with both.
And Mr. Persis, that was my question when I said, well, you know, most people want to see at least a sketch of what could
show
be.
Show me something, yeah.
And so I agree with you, but he did. So if what I'm hearing from you, Mr. Akins, it's a recommendation from the superintendent to move forward with the planning. Am I correct?
Yes, ma'am. So we would like to go ahead and start scheduling by RSVP. We can use Campbell. We can use different venues to start our communication talk. He's already going to start on the design and all of that, but we need to start now with that piece. And if everybody's okay with that, then Stephanie Doster, Ms. Doster, will start scheduling those meetings with all of our stakeholders. We just need direction, that's all. I mean, to move forward.
Go ahead, Ms. Haynes, and then Ms. Cuthbert.
So one question I have is,
am I available to give some numbers? I know there were questions about the possible population of Turie T.
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay, I know. So our projections for Turie T. Small next year are about 487 students, and that's based on our projections that are coming from our demographer. So if we built a 750 capacity new Turie T., that would make about 263 available seats. So I would, you know, in the design process, I really think it's important to think about how. Number one, how big can we go? How big do we want to go? What can be accommodated on this new site and in this new design? Because
If we could go a little larger, if we have the funds and the available space to go a little larger, we could accommodate more students in that area. With the new Ortona site being built at 750, depending on the programming there, we can accommodate maybe another 137 students to be rezoned to Ortona. So, I mean, if we're looking at that, that's about 400 of these 700 students. So I just wanted to point that out, that, you know, that was one of my concerns, is available capacity.
Okay, and that's a good point. I guess that we need to talk about, could we go larger? And that's something, Mr. Groove, I guess you all could tell us if we could go to 850.
Right.
But it would depend on cost, I know. So.
Yeah, there are some constraints there we'd have to evaluate in terms of the site and administration, just the availability to accommodate that,
okay,
that size of a program there.
Okay.
Ms. So actually, that's where I was going with what I was going to say. Because I sat years ago in the meetings when they made the decision to take University High larger, because they knew that the community, like the kids were already there. And so, you know, we got permission from the state to build University High larger than what the standard high school was. So my question was going to be, can we build Turie T? Because even now with what Stephanie has said, if there's approximately 253 seats available, you know, that are open, and even if Ortona had the 137, as she said, that's only 400 and some of the 705 students that are identified. And that's, you know, that's today's numbers. That's mm-hmm. banking on no more children, you know, move in or become of age, you know, to go into the school and things like that. And, you know, we have elementary schools out there that at any given point, and, you know, one of them sits in my district, one does sit over in District 2, that have reached the 1,000-point capacity, mm-hmm. but yet they're not billed to hold 1,000 students. And so I would like to see, taking into account the 705, you know, right now that are bussed out, keeping in mind, like if we even just said it was going to remain stable at approximately 700 students that we are busing out of there, what would it take between the new Ortona, you know, build and, you know, what size approximately? And I understand we're not going to house them all, you know, but like you kind of have to look at geographically. So, you know, are they then a little closer mm-hmm. to possibly going to South Daytona, or are they a little closer to go to Palm Terrace or Westside, or, you know, even Holly Hill? But like, look at the whole picture, and I would rather accommodate more students in their neighborhood. If, and I don't know if we still have to have permission from the state. I know at one time we did to build it larger, but, you know, if we're going to add, if we're going to take it to 850 or even 900, you know, and build it so that it holds, you know, has 900 seats, you know, in it, I think we're being smarter in the long run, instead of then having to pull portables in, because that's what we've done at these schools. I mean, we pulled entire portables into Citrus Grove when it went up to almost 1,000. We pulled portables into DeBerry right after it opened. We doubled classes there, you know, and we ran kindergarten through second and third grade. We put two teachers and 36 kids in rooms that weren't even built to hold 36 kids. So I want to see us do the correct planning up front. It's not as if we're saying, well, maybe the kids will come. We already have the kids in the neighborhood. We already have the numbers. So if we're going to do what's right by the students and allow them to attend a community-based school, which I'm a proponent of, then I think we need to stop talking about 750 and mm-hmm. be more realistic with a number to accommodate all the kids.
Yes, ma'am. Heard you loud and clear.
Ms. Cuthbert?
I was going to say something similarly. We need to address those needs of the population, mm-hmm. but I don't want to lose that small elementary feel. If there is a way to have primary on one side and the intermediate on the other, keep them together, we might have more room. Have one wing that is accommodating 400, the other wing of 400, but separate the groups so that they still have that feel for a smaller, comfortable
loving elementary, that the children need that support and they need that emotional and that camaraderie that might, you know, carry through the rest of their lives. And that's one of the coolest things at graduation is when you look around, you're sitting next to somebody you've known since kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to make sure that we don't lose that nice feel. So when you consider design,
yes,
keep that maybe in the mm-hmm. back of your mind and not just push them all together.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, Madam Chair, I'm in favor of moving forward.
Okay. Thank you. And so I believe all my colleagues are saying move forward, have fun, and I'll see you on the other side.
Yes, ma'am. All right. Thank you, Dr. Bell-Gobin.
If I can add something.
Sure, Mr. Groove.
We haven't taken any of this yet to our Citizens Oversight Committee. They will be a major participant in this whole effort. So they're aware of this discussion, but we haven't formally taken anything to them yet. So they, when we move forward, they'll be engaged very fully in this effort.
And that's next week, I think, next Thursday.
Okay. Great. That's perfect. Go ahead, Mr. Colon.
On our Citizens Oversight Committee, do we have any members from this community on there?
I don't know. I would have to check and see.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would hate for it to be, you know, if we don't have a balance, then who is making the decision for what community? And so I believe in the committee and I believe in the Citizens Advisory Board, but I'd probably trust the committee that's set up from the community with the thought process and working together with that.
Absolutely.
Group, because if you're talking too different, I'm in Deltona, I know nothing about that neighborhood. And so, you know, the folks who are in that neighborhood could by far, you know, express their needs and concerns a lot better than I can. So,
what was your question, Mr. Clone? I'm sorry.
Well, I asked if there was any representation on the oversight committee from that community.
Because on the half-cent sale?
Because he's on the half-cent, yeah.
Well, yes, I do have a representative. And we will invite them because most of them have some really great insight that either come from finance or construction. Mm-hmm. So we will make sure, like I said, I will be involved in this. So, yes, we'll make sure they're there.
Okay. We got our direction. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, team.
Moving to item 2.02, construction, renovation, and system strategies.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But quickly, I want to share that I've taken notes regarding point 2.01. And I also want you to know that Dr. Frick, this is a project that's very important to him, and we've had several conversations in terms of looking at perhaps an IB program or a magnet program for that community. But I know that you will do a phenomenal job assisting us, Mrs. Wright, with this project, and we thank you in advance. Now, 202, we have our presenters here already at the table, and I would like to ask Mr. Aiken, Dave Galletto, our Assistant Director for Maintenance and Operations. They are going to provide us with an update as it relates to, just to give you a quick recap, our operations staff is currently revisiting its HVAC approved design guidelines. And Mr. Aiken and his operations staff, they worked on a presentation which also contains some recommendations for the district's HVAC and generator system for our new construction and renovation projects. And they're ready to display that presentation and have some discussion with us.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Dr. Balcoven, board members. Thank you for having us here this morning. We want to recap, or I'm sorry, cover some old ground with you. Back on October the 18th of last year, we spoke about the condition and future of... Oh, I didn't know I was doing that. I thought...
No.
Okay, good. That's not it.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was saying, last year, Mr. Aiken and Ms. Sarah Lee Morrissey and myself sat in front of you and we talked about HVAC strategies and which way we would go forward. So the beginning of this year, as we shared, I think earlier, the first 3 weeks of school, we had 779 rooms affected by HVAC failures, whether it was chillers, energy management, or DX. And that's the breakdown looks like 610 chillers, which was 78% of the failures were related to chillers. 126 failures, or 16%, was related to energy management. And 43 failures, or 6%, was related to DX systems. So we had to ask ourselves, after seeing this information, how can we make improvements and how can we standardize as much as possible moving forward? So we met internally and we've talked about generators, HVAC, expectations going forward into new construction and renovation. And what we came up with was, at the elementary level, whenever possible, the cafeteria, the kitchen, building one, would be on a generator with HVAC, also on the generator, either in the form of a package unit or a chiller. Classrooms would be on bards, package units, or splits. Media center, package, splits, or chiller. And classroom additions, 9 classroom, 11 classroom additions would be on bards, package, or splits. At the middle, whenever possible, again, cafeteria, kitchen, building one on generator with the HVAC. Again, package or chiller. Classroom on bards, packages, or splits. Medias, auditoriums, packages, or chillers. Locker rooms, dance, weight rooms, bards, packages, or splits. Classroom additions, bards, packages, or splits. In the high schools, the cafeteria, kitchen building on generator with HVAC, package or chiller, pony chiller. Classrooms on chiller, multi-story on bards, package units, splits, first floor when possible. Splits on first floor when possible. If you notice, the classrooms in the elementary, the middle, and the high, we're trying to get to DX. When you see splits or packages moving forward, we would like to see them on splits or package units or bards. And in high school, in the gym, in the auditorium, the band, chiller, after hours for a small pony chiller so that we can better, more effectively manage the energy management in those areas. Locker rooms, dance, weight rooms on barge packages or splits, because when those areas are occupied, especially weight rooms, the kids come in over the summer and we have to turn the chillers on for the weight rooms. Classroom additions, bards, packages, or splits. So I think we've had some success since we last talked in the area of bringing classrooms back to DX. So what has happened is we met with the engineers of Ortona, and we came to an agreement of sorts on what systems would be used in that new school. And I'll let Dave talk about that for a second.
Yes. Good morning, Madam Chair, board members, and Dr. Balgobin. So we know that there's different systems that will work, okay? But I think the right question is, what fits? What fits the school design and what fits the district, long-term and short-term? So we had some very good, productive discussion with Steve Grube's team and the engineers and Mr. Aiken, and we decided on a design that would be a DX package system throughout the school. And why did we do that? Because we think that's a great fit, not only for the school, but for the district, short and long term. So efficiency-wise, just to give you a quick comparison, if we're going to use a system, would we rather turn on a 150-ton chiller to cool one building, or would you rather turn on a 40-ton unit to cool one building? Well, the answer is obvious. We'd rather turn on a 40-ton package unit, okay? And not only from a usage standpoint, because we do a great job, the district does a great job, you know, work with the schools, providing them the quality of air and the condition, whether it's during a school day or whether it's after hours for an extended day program or an event. So, you know, knowing we do such a good job, what design fits? Well, the package design fits. We could turn on one building and only utilize, you know, a percentage of the energy. Cost. That package design is a lot friendlier to a budget than a chiller design. Again, both systems work. I don't want to give off the impression that one system, you know, is better than the other. It's what fits and what's right. For this school and this location, budget-wise, this system fits. Flexibility. Again, what do I mean by flexibility? We chose this system or this type of system because typically in the past we've all experienced when we lose a chiller, a lot of times we lose an entire school. We've just impacted 750, possibly 850 students, right, if we design that way. Whereas if we go with the package design we've come up with Ortona, we're going to only affect one building, so a small percentage. Also, it's conducive to repair and replacement, to perform emergency repair on a chiller. It's very involved. We are bringing in rental chillers. That's an encumbered cost that nobody wants to have to fit that bill. And then the repair itself, depending on what it is, they don't have chillers sitting on the shelves. Whereas with this design, these units are more readily available. There's much, the lead time is much less. The parts are ready available for this type of system compared to a board for a chiller. And finally, the replacement cycle. Mr. Young's talking about a strategy for the district. This provides us a strategy, whether it's a strategy that fits the entire district as a whole, or we can come up with a strategy within a strategy. Just for that site, it would be very easy to create a 1 or 2 year strategy and replace 5 or 6 units. That's friendlier to the budget. It's friendlier to the manpower. So this gives us an opportunity to think strategy in a couple of different directions. And last, what are we good at? What is the maintenance department good at? Looking at our challenges with the loss in workforce, like every other school board across the nation, what does our talent pool look like, coupled with the shortage of manpower? We are excellent at repairing and replacing these types of systems. It's more challenging for other types of systems, whether it's a cooling tower, whether it's a chiller. These systems are much friendlier to our structure. So I think with the help of Mr. Grube's group, I think this was an excellent decision. I think it fits the school, and I think it fits the district.
So going through this process, it led into another concern. And let me just say up front, I am wholeheartedly in support of replacing T.T. Small. As a person that knows that school very well, I am wholeheartedly in support of replacing T.T. Small. But I think we need to take a look at some of the systems that we have in the district as it relates to parking lots. We have parking lots that have not been touched in years. We have main distribution panels, the main electrical panels in schools that have not been touched in years. We have generators, and these are all the top 10 schools on the list, and I know I'm blowing through this, but
Mr. Young.
Yes, ma'am.
Can we stop for 1 minute, because I think it was a couple questions, and I saw Mr. Cologne. Okay. I think about the replacements, but go ahead, Mr. Cologne.
So I want to go back a few slides, and first of all, my apologies because I didn't ask before, but what is a bard? What is a pony? What is a And so, again, these are questions I probably should have asked before. However, for the benefit of the public, because most folks have no idea what we're talking about, number one. And then my next question is, we've taken the talent that we have in the district to come up with this presentation. However, have we also worked with our vendors to ensure that this is a good idea? And the reason I ask is, you know, just recently we were talking about a similar presentation of what's ideal and what we should do. And then when I asked, what are we doing at Deltona Middle, I was told the chiller. And everybody held their head down and everybody said, you know, as we were saying that it's horrible, it's terrible, it's not the way to do it. And so I think we should, and I guess I'm looking at the superintendent with the consensus, I'd like to know what, you know, national standards are for school buildings for that. Not that I don't trust your decision, but it's to validate your decision, because having worked in healthcare for a long time, every construction project was based on the director that was there at the time. And so a new director came and we redid the whole entire area all over again 5 years later. By the time we were done building it out, it was already outgrown. And so I think as we're looking forward, maybe getting that professional industry, you know, because a lot of times it's, you know, it's the folks around the table doing the best job that they know how. So I'm not taking that away at all. But again, it kills me to hear this presentation knowing that we're not doing the best for a school that hasn't even, that has just started coming off the ground. And that at no point could we say stop, because we agreed 3 years ago that this is what we were going to do. And so it eats me inside to think that we're doing something that's less than optimal for a school that just got off the ground.
Okay.
So if you could just, like I said, break it down really quick on what a BARD is, what a pony is.
Okay, let me answer two questions. A BARD is a package unit that attaches to the wall. And usually it would take the place of a window, like Coronado has BARDs. The old Chisholm had BARDs. The old classroom building at Pearson has BARDs. It's a single wall-hung package unit is what it is. And a pony is a very small chiller that 30, 40 ton chiller that you might have a single pony on, like this says, on the kitchen, in the cafeteria. If you were, let's say you were going to go into Silver Sands and put a new system there, my recommendation would be to put the type of system that we're putting on Ortona on the classroom buildings, but on the gym and the cafeteria, you might have a small pony chiller to operate those two buildings. A lot of times, like on an Atlantic campus or a DeLand High or a Deltona, you have a small chiller, a pony chiller, that comes on first. When you come in the morning and turn on the AC, that pony chiller comes on, and until it can't handle the load anymore. And then it asks for another bigger chiller to come on, until it can't handle the load. And then it asks for another chiller to come on. So it's a small chiller is what it is. To answer your question on the system, we knew we had a meeting coming up with a construction group, so I called a lot of our surrounding counties all the way up to Jacksonville to find out what their feeling was on chillers and BARDs and splits and packages, and they said the same thing, that they don't have the talent or the money to pay people to work on chillers, that their comfort zone is with the DX systems, the splits, the packages. So the gentleman in Clay County put it the best. He said that his most economical systems and the easiest systems that he has to work on are the package units, because if a package unit goes out on, say, a 9, a 10, a 12 classroom building, he can literally have the guys come up, disconnect it, pull it out, and plop in another one, and it's done in a day, right? So when we went into the meeting with the engineers, we were talking about all different types of systems, and the engineer was actually pushing to put chillers on Ortona until we started talking about some of the problems that we're having with chillers. And so we floated the idea of a package, and he and talked about getting rid of all the water underground and the water that runs through the buildings that's associated with chillers, and just having a package unit and some, you know, VAVs up in the ceiling, and that's it, and some ductwork, obviously. And he sat back in the chair, and he said, that's the most efficient system that we could put in. And so that gave us some hope that maybe we had finally found some common ground. So that is the system that they designed for the school.
And so with that being said, and you know, you keep going back to our limitations being personnel. And so if we're going to buy a bunch of small units because we have the personnel to fix it, because we obviously can't pay the right people to be here in our district and work, then maybe, you know, and so again, I'm not questioning the decision. It's just I want to make sure that we're making the best decision. And if it means we have to hire four guys that can work on chillers and are trained to work on chillers, then that may be, you know, cheaper than buying 10,000, you know,
it's really
central AC units. So a package unit is like what we have at Campbell. Is that where they have the central ACs outside?
They have splits at Campbell, yes.
Okay. Because even splits are new. I mean, people are starting to put splits in their houses now.
Right.
I mean, it's a new thought process. But anyways, cool.
But a package, let me be clear, on a package, you can have a very small package on an individual classroom, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about this, if I'm not mistaken, I think the Ortona project has 7 packages on it, if I'm not mistaken. And so they're 40-ton packages. So one package would take care of, say, 8, 9, 10 classrooms. So
and if I may add, you know, that workforce piece, yes, that's a real concern and a real challenge, and not just for us, for everybody, but that's a piece of it. So if we're looking at the equipment, if we want to say, are we doing the right thing by the equipment, I could take the chillers they wanted, they initially suggested for Ortona compared to the package units for Ortona. So the difference is simple. We could put the chillers in, the 150-ton chillers, and at best, they can drop to a 20% load, at best. So my example where do we only want to turn on one building, which may only be 20 tons needed, at best, those chillers can only drop to a 20% load. And what the engineer really liked and why he made the comment, the units we proposed, 140-ton, has the ability to drop to 15% load. So not only can we isolate the campus and save money because we're running a smaller unit, the units themselves can drop to a lower efficiency than the chillers. So we think the equipment is a good choice for those reasons.
Go ahead, Mr. Akins, and I see Mr. Grube inched his way up, so just in case he wants to say something.
Talking about hiring staff, that's our goal. We actually are working towards a level 4 person that we get trained in HVAC, our chiller units, high in HVAC, a higher level person to be able to build on those controls and fix the chiller units that we currently have. A hybrid system is outstanding. Both systems are outstanding, everything you talked about. It's about putting on that campus what we need to do. Your Deltona one, we're already beyond where we are to already have everything put in place. So it's too late to change anything there, but moving forward, we are looking at the hybrids.
I want Mr. Grube, because I think he wanted to say something.
I just wanted to reassure you that you're not getting a less than optimal system at Deltona Middle School. And we all realize, too, that there's not a one-size-fits-all solution to any of these. We know we're going to take each project, look at it individually, and come up with the best solution, whether it's a remodel or a new construction. There are certain situations where a central energy plant with a chiller is necessary. And when you have a three-story building, you're pretty much going to be going with a central energy plant with a chill water system. They do have their advantages and their limitations, like everything does. But you know what we agreed as a team was we would sit down as each project came along and look at them individually, determine what the best solution would be for each school. But I just wanted to reassure you that you're getting a.
Oh, it was what it was. I mean, by the time I got here, this was done. So, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Go ahead, Ms. Haynes.
So I'm actually happy to see that we're moving in this direction because I have not been a fan of chillers for a very, very long time. Mr. Aiken knows that, especially during summer times when, you know, Freedom Elementary, brand new school, and the chiller system goes down and you have no air in any part of the building. So I do support, like, the 40-ton units and the fact that you can do better control and you can turn on just an area that you need and everything. And so, you know, I'm happy that we finally have reached this point because even when you look at the agenda for later today, one of my questions was going to be, and I'm going to go ahead and ask it now, it's item 10.09, and it says that you're asking us to approve a certificate of substantial completion for the upgrade of the chiller plant at Deltona Lakes Elementary. And my question was going to be this. Deltona Lakes Elementary has invariably had air conditioning issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just an ongoing issue there. It just never seems to correct itself. Something happens and there's no air in that school. So my question is, so we upgraded the chiller there, not looking at doing some type of a package thing by putting in 40-ton units and all that. So, you know, if and when we vote on this later today, are you assuring me that this upgrade of this chiller at Deltona Lakes is going to solve the issues that we continue to have repeatedly at Deltona Lakes with air conditioning? Anybody want to promise?
Well, that would be the intent, yes. And sometimes these remodeling projects lend themselves to a certain solution based upon the equipment that was already in place. And so if the chilled water lines are already there and then we're redoing the chiller. Again, these are, like I mentioned before, we look at these, and going forward, we're going to be even with more scrutiny looking forward to each one of these on a case-by-case basis to determine what the best solution is. So we're confident that project was designed and budgeted correctly, and ideally, yes, it's going to solve those problems. Is it going to eliminate them? I don't think anything's really perfect. There's going to be some issues, but going forward, we're confident that we're making the right decisions there.
So my challenge to you from this point moving forward, because like I said, I've waited to hear a presentation like this where we finally stated we're going to look at each thing individually instead of just installing a chiller system, that when the whole thing goes down, the whole school goes out of air. Yeah, I mean, we live in Florida. I mean, it is November right now, November 10th today, and it's still how hot outside, okay? We don't have the luxury of that. We live in a state where there's only a few months of heat. I mean, pretty much we live in heat year-round here. And so, you know, when we look at the buildings and we look at the size of the buildings and then we look at the number of students that we put in there, the bottom line is when it goes down, it's unbearable. You know, and learning then is impacted because kids aren't going to learn when they're sitting there in the heat. You know, teachers are going to struggle with teaching in the heat. And so I'm happy that we're moving forward this way. What I'd like to challenge you, though, is as you move forward to make adjustments, make corrections, upgrade systems that are not working, not to just immediately say, and I'll just use Freedom Elementary as an example. In the event that the chiller system goes out at Freedom, what I don't want to hear is, well, we're going to spend, you know, $500,000 to upgrade that, instead of saying, take a step back for a minute and say, how many ongoing issues have we had with that chiller system? How many times have we had to go out? What has it cost us to bring people in to repair it? What's the maintenance on it? And maybe it's time, yes, those water lines are running, which still makes no sense that water cools in Florida, but put in this type of a system there.
And I hear what you're saying about Deltona Middle, because I also asked a lot of questions about Deltona Middle. I also do understand about it being a three-story building. But I will tell you right now, my expectation is that if this afternoon we approve the substantial completion of the upgraded chiller at Deltona Lakes, I expect it to work. And if it doesn't work, then I'm coming back to say, so why did we just spend all of this money and we still don't have a viable solution for the students and faculty on that campus?
Thank you.
If I may, in the chiller's defense at Deltona Lakes and the design, I agree with Mr. Groom, but part of, I'll at least say my reasoning on this type of selection with the package unit, is that system at Deltona Lakes is dependent on the domestic water lines. And most of the failures at Deltona Lakes you're referring to were related to massive domestic water line leaks and failures. We have dug